So Aniston is at the heart of two chemical dramas of the 20th century. One is the need to clean up toxic PCB pollution, and the other is the serious chemical weapons drama that unfolded there. Aniston is not only home to the Monsanto Chemical Company and its successor companies, but it also hosted two military installations, which also have environmental problems.
Was this covered extensively in the media? What sort of played out?
One of the problems in Aniston is a problem of silences, and that is in the early years, local people had no real knowledge. Workers at the plant were getting sick. They had severe skin disfiguring disease called chloracne. Turned out that workers working with the chemicals also had liver disease. But the people in Aniston, even though the world found out in 1966 that polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, were pervasive, persistent, and toxic, people in Aniston didn't really learn of the extent of pollution in the land and in their bodies until the mid-1990s.
In the mid-1990s is when this sort of all went down in Aniston, right? When there was a lawsuit, correct?
That's right. That's when a contractor pulled a badly deformed fish out of Chocolaca Creek, had it tested. Alabama Power found that the part of their substation that had been bought from the Monsanto company in the early 60s was contaminated with PCBs, and the news hit the press. It was all over the Aniston Star, the local, nationally known local paper, and other major press story.
Was Monsanto really aggressive about fighting it? Because sort of as we hear the name Monsanto these days, it's often tied up in lawsuits. You hear about seed patents and things like that with Monsanto, where they go very hard in sort of, taking these people on. And I wonder what the situation was like for the residents of Aniston.
Well, the companies, Monsanto and its partner companies, did fight very aggressively in these lawsuits. One of the attorneys said he'd never been a part of litigation that was fought so vigorously. The plaintiffs were local people, people who lived in Aniston or had lived in Aniston, people near the plant. It turned out that chemical exposures were rather widespread, and so ultimately there were more than 20,000 plaintiffs in the lawsuits against Monsanto and Solutia and their partner companies.
And you talked about in the book how sort of the civil rights played a role, or at least the lessons from the civil rights.
Well, Aniston, as you know, is an iconic site in the civil rights movement. It was the place where on Mother's Day 1961, local Klan sympathizers burned a Freedom Riders bus that was traveling through the South challenging the segregation of bus stations across the South. And the leaders in that struggle, local leaders, people like Reverend Quentin N.Q. Reynolds, Reverend McLean, and others, were certainly leaders in the Southern civil rights years. And Reverend Reynolds was still around for the PCB fight. Some of the activists in the PCB fight were children of civil rights activists.
Okay. Why did you personally get interested in this?
Well, I was interested in how is it that environmental injustice is produced over time? People in the 1980s and 1990s identified environmental racism. We could see these patterns on the landscape, see that communities of color and low-income communities were more likely to host hazardous waste facilities. But I was interested in, historically, how did it come to be that way?
Mm. And what did you sort of find? Was it that underprivileged communities in general were just more vulnerable to somebody coming in and just using that property, I guess?
There were multiple factors. Certainly the egregious behavior on the part of the chemical industry in these local places, not paying attention to the wastes that were leaving their plant, up to 250 pounds a day at one point of polychlorinated biphenyl contaminated waste was leaving this plant in Aniston. Plenty of egregious behavior is recounted in the litigation and in this book. But probably it couldn't have persisted for this long without an array of supporting players, that is, regulatory inaction from the state and federal level. The presence of the military, which made secrecy, talking about problems in industry or at the military installations, those factors also contributed to, over time, this not coming to light until really 70 years after the fact.
Part of your book deals with chemical weapons stockpiles from the Cold War.
That's right. The other chemical drama of the 20th century that Anniston has been dealing with is that city is the site of one of the 8 continental U.S. sites where chemical weapons were stored. They were distributed all over the country, part of the strategic placement of these weapons. Gases, nerve agents that were designed to kill people.
Yeah.
Sarin, VX, a mustard gas, all weapons of the Cold War were stockpiled at various places, and Anniston was one of them. And in the late 1980s, so before the PCB issues came to light, in the late 1980s, local people found out, one, that the weapons were stored at the Anniston Army Depot, and two, that the Army planned to incinerate them on the site. So you can imagine what kind of shock that was to local people. These weapons were designed to kill people. Now those weapons have been destroyed in Anniston. They were incinerated. Local groups formed, families concerned about nerve gas incineration. Local group very vigorously worked for safe disposal of chemical weapons. Even the people who favored incineration now give them a lot of credit, give them respect for having fought for safer methods of disposal.
Was there any parallel between that battle and the battle over the PCBs?
Well, some of the activists were involved in both.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the issues are similar. Finding out how do you learn the scientific knowledge that's necessary to know what's harmful, what's going to happen. A lot of uncertainty surrounds these chemicals. So, yes, there were some parallels.
When you were researching the book, who were some of the people that stood out to you as you just mentioned some of those activists? Who are some of those people that were, you know, carrying the flag, so to speak?
Well, on the chemical weapons front, one of the people I interviewed was Brenda Lindell, who moved to Anniston particularly to find a hospitable place to raise. She and her husband moved there to raise their 3 children. And then she began reading in the paper about this plan to incinerate weapons. And so she was brand new to activism. Other people, leaders in the anti-PCB fight, people like Cassandra Roberts, who had grown up in Sweet Valley, formed a group called Sweet Valley Cobtown Environmental Justice Task Force, people who lived closest to the plant. David Baker, Shirley Baker, were involved in Community Against Pollution. So local activists really led the way.
And how did the PCB lawsuit pan out eventually? Did they win?
Yes, they won, and they won significantly. In 2003, there were major settlements or series of lawsuits, but the 2 largest ones were settled in 2003 with a $600 million settlement, additional $100 million for cleanup. But many people said to me when I interviewed them at the time, money doesn't restore your health.
Right.
There were some innovative features of that settlement, an education foundation, funding for a health clinic. But those funds were set to come for 10 or 12 years. And so that time is now running out. Especially older people in Anniston carry a body burden of PCBs in their body. That's one study showed there were 4 times greater than the average U.S. adult. PCBs are a whole family of chemicals. They are associated with a number of disease conditions, immune disorders, neurocognitive deficits in children. The EPA and the International Agency for Research on Cancer identifies PCBs as probable human carcinogens. So people are living with the knowledge that they have a body burden of PCBs, but without real certainty about what that will exactly mean for their health.
when you look at Aniston, does it sort of encapsulate all of these other fights that we see? Like, I being from North Carolina, we heard a lot about Camp Lejeune, the water contamination there. We've got battles right now going on in Tarrant, in Birmingham, over coal ash, the ABC Coke plant there in Tarrant. People are at least alleging that there's black ash in their homes. And I mean, just there was just a settlement just the other day over fracking for the first time, I think, ever in Texas, that someone was awarded $3 million. I mean, when you look at all this that's going on, is Aniston a lesson in how to fight these battles? Or, I mean, does it give you hope and optimism? Or
one of the commenters on this book said that it was at times inspiring, maddening, depressing, and instructive. So I think it's all of those things that you mentioned. Certainly the leadership on the part of local people, the activism, is absolutely inspiring. At the same time, Aniston is emblematic of a problem that you point out the country as a whole faces. We need better means of regulating toxic chemicals. The Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976, which is the law that governs chemical policy in the U.S., was weak to begin with, and it's badly out of date. It actually banned PCBs, banned PCB production, which was its major victory.
Okay.
Actually stopping production of PCBs in the late 70s. It achieved that goal.
Then why what played out in Aniston in the 90s then?
Well, the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA as it's referred to, did not require the company to seek out and destroy the existing PCBs. So the EPA estimates it left 750 million pounds of PCBs in place. And a half million pounds of PCB contaminated waste reside in the landfill. That's uphill from where people who live next to the plant used to live. They've been relocated. PCBs were widely valued for their use as insulating materials in electrical equipment, mm-hmm. capacitors, transformers, a whole range of use as plasticizers as well. Those transformers, many of them old transformers dated before 1977, all over the country, all over the world, could still have PCB fluids in them.
Has the state legislature done anything about, did they do anything about Aniston? Have they done anything about the threats of all of these plants that people are concerned about?
Representative Barbara Boyd, who represents that area, tried to get the Alabama legislature to address these issues. As yet, I'm not aware of any legislative action on the state level.
Okay. What does that say about our priorities?
Well, I think we do need to put a greater priority on environmental legislation that not only prevents situations like Aniston from happening, but foresees the need to regulate chemicals more tightly in the future. There's a broad effort nationally to reform the Toxic Substances Control Act, mm-hmm. to make a much stronger bill that will shift the burden to industry to show that their chemicals are safe rather than waiting until the damage has been done and dealing with litigation after the fact.
Well, how long did it take you to write the book, and what was the whole experience like for you?
Well, I began my interviewing in 2003.
Okay.
Right at the time that the global settlement was taking place. I anticipated reticence, but people were very interested in talking about what was going on locally. They uniformly, people said, I want to make sure this doesn't happen to another community. Mm-hmm. I interviewed lots of people on all sides of the debate, traveled to St. Louis to interview officials at Monsanto and Solutia, their successor plant. Went to California to interview Robert Risebrough, who did some of the early research on impact of PCBs on avian life. Went to Sweden to interview Soren Jensen, who was the scholar, the chemist who identified and made public that PCBs were persistent, pervasive, and toxic in 1966. So it was an extraordinary opportunity to hear, and I've tried to represent all of those voices in the book.
What would you say when we're looking around the state right now? Obviously, I brought up Tarrant. Are there other communities where there is this pollution going on that people need to be aware of or anything like that?
Well, I've looked particularly at Anniston, but there are issues statewide. Alabama is host to the country's largest hazardous waste dump at Amell, Alabama. That's in Sumter County. That's a majority black county, so raises concerns of environmental justice once again. This was a predominantly African-American, is a predominantly African-American community in West Anniston. Also working class white residents. That's who's been affected by many of these cases. So just on the equity grounds, on the justice grounds, we need to do something about these cases.